Bloody hell, it's been a while since we've done one of these, isn't it? Oh, I almost forgot the... Yeah, I can't believe we almost forgot the whole recommendation thing at the end.
I already said it's because I literally had to do the same. So, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I was just like, just scrolling through my phone like, I must have a list somewhere. I must have a list of films.
Do you know when...
Where is it?
Do you know how long it's been since we recommended these ones?
I dread to think. It's got to be around about... It's got to be in the months, right?
Well, yeah.
Maybe 2 months?
I think it's like going on 5, right?
5?
Or 4. Maybe 4.
Have you been away for that long?
I think the last double feature was...
Oh, I'm going to have to check now.
Yeah, the third.
Goodness, 5 months. How's that happen?
So yeah, almost 5 months.
So we went on a long Barbados holiday.
Something like
I
that.
I think.
Something like that.
Something
yeah.
like that. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, right? The last one, I believe, was Suspiria and American Psycho. That was in March.
Yeah.
4 months. That is crazy. Well, oop, I've missed it. Oops. Whoops. My microphone, it was actually dusty. It's very poetic. I was like, taking all the dust off the mic. I was like, ready to go. It was all perfect, and I stubbed my toe coming in my room. Spilt my tea down me. So I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Can't wait. We're going to have all the voice cracks. We're going to have all the not making sense.
Because it's been a while. This is our recurring segment where we recommend 2 films and we talk about them.
Double feature time.
Double feature.
Uh-huh.
I think I get to go first this time, so I'll just talk about my film.
Oh, perfect. Go on then, what's your film, Alex?
I gave you the... Oh, fuck. Right, let me look. I always forget the years.
Brilliant.
I believe it's 2005.
Oh, to be fair, I haven't even... Oh, God, we're so cranky. How's this happening?
Yeah, this is...
This is unacceptable.
Don't worry. We'll edit all of this out. 2005's Grizzly Man, directed by Werner Herzog.
Mm.
It's the first documentary that we've spoken about on the show. We haven't done documentary on the show
is
before.
Is it? Just... Whoa. Round of applause, please.
Why I recommended it.
Okay.
It is about... it's a kind of chronicling of the final sort of days of one Timothy Treadwell, who would go and spend his summers in a national park in Alaska to study and protect the local grizzlies. Obviously, the film...
Big film, bears.
Big, angry, scary bears. Film opens with the information that he has been mauled to death and eaten by one of these bears. And the documentary saw an exploration of, you know, what was he doing? And who was he?
Yeah.
And what kind of drove him to go out there, and was he even accomplishing anything doing it, and why, you know, what was his connection with these animals, and it's got some delightful narration from Werner, who just has this amazing creepy unsettling voice.
Southern deep voice. Yeah.
Did you say southern?
Southern. Yeah, it's probably a poor way of describing it.
No, yeah. German.
How... German, yeah. It's not really southern. It's more kind of... What? You don't even know. It could be southern. It's no, south German, somewhere.
Yeah. I guess Germany is south of us.
I don't know, man. It's been a while since I've seen this now. It was, well, 4 months. Yeah.
That's really...
It's quite crazy.
Today.
It's Oh, really?
Just to refresh it.
Yeah. Well, I wrote quite a few notes on this one just because I was... I mean, it was a hell of a ride, but it literally is a documentary about a man who gets mauled to death by bears. And that's what it boils down to.
I think it's about more than that in a way.
I'm not taking away like the merit of it.
I just mean like it gets the bears kill them thing. That's like one of the first things you learn.
They get that out of the way, right? I'm glad they did that as well.
It's more of an exploration of this guy's kind of psyche
character. Yeah.
Where he was at.
And I feel like, although I kind of got it, I was still questioning it when it finished. Which is like a great thing for discussion. Because what I mean is that it boils down to the fact that no matter his kind of like outlook on it and his character, like he was just, he met his fate that everyone else thought he would. But it was really compelling to see how like everyone speaks about him in different ways. I think the weirdest one was obviously of the coroner, who was the creepiest guy I've ever seen on tape. He was just like, yeah, so like this is what happened to him. And I just think he was a bit silly doing it, to be honest. But and then you obviously have all the other people who knew him personally, and they all have different opinions about him. But you kind of allow yourself, it allows you to just witness a lot of the self-tape footage, right? And make up your own opinion of him, which was actually really nice. You spent a long time just watching that archive, because he used to make films when he was out there about the bears, and yeah, it's kind of like a vlog, right? About how the bears were, what they were saying, what kind of dangers they're facing, and all these kind of things. Just expressing his kind of interest, knowledge, and love for the terrifying fucking huge ball of mass that was always on screen.
Yeah, there's I want to talk about this documentary because I think it's one of those rare ones where you do actually see like a wide range of opinions about
perspectives, perspectives
on, you know, on the subject. And Herzog himself even has this kind of dialogue throughout the film, through his narration, where he's kind of having a conversation with Treadwell and is disagreeing with him a lot of the time, and you know, saying how he's got this kind of he's got this really pure view on nature, when there's a part of the movie where Herzog says like, you know, I disagree because I think the common theme in nature is, you know, chaos and hostility and murder, and Treadwell sees it as this harmonious thing, which it isn't. He's kind of criticizing him as he's like mourning. Treadwell finds like a dead pup, like a baby fox, and he's kind of like mourning the body, and Hertz was kind of just pointing out kind of the, it's weird that he's this kind of man of the wild, and you know, and he's made his whole thing living in nature with these creatures, but he can't let go of these really like human like emotions, and then people talking about how there's a kind of natural barrier, there's a reason why these animals are separate and we avoid them and they avoid us, and when you blur those lines, that's when, you know, that's when the problems start to occur.
Problems. Yeah. Which, big, you know, fucking problems.
And I think there's also some valid critiques of Treadwell in terms of what was he actually doing, because I don't, like, he was claiming to be protecting the animals, but I don't know how he was doing that. His sort of plan just seemed to be to go out there and vibe with him.
it's pretty epic mission
accomplished. And
yeah,
I think it's very beautiful, this kind of connection he has with the bears and stuff. But he was clearly a very, like, the documentary goes into his sort of past and how he's a very troubled man. And I think, like, clearly this obsession with the animals and the bears was kind of like a new addiction for him, because he had been a drug addict and a drinker.
Through so much else. Yeah.
And kind of moving from thing to thing and constantly needing to create like a persona. And like, there's a very revealing moment where one of his best friends in an interview is talking about how one day he just turned up and he had completely changed his look, and he was talking in a different accent, and you know, it was this constant look for a new persona, and this grizzly man persona, I think, was an extension of that.
To. Sure. And that's a really tough part of it, I think, because you learn so much about his progression as a person. You kind of forget that, like who he was before this. And the only thing that you have to go off is all these other accounts of people who have, like, he used to be like this, he's gone through this. Like, 90% of the documentary, I was going, I think this is stupid, because, like, if you start getting attacked by a grizzly bear, you're going to defend yourself. And then he's like, well, actually, if I ever got attacked, I'd just let it happen. So at that point, I was kind of like, well, at least he's aware in that respect, you know. He's not really going to hurt the bears, per se. But I think the bears might have definitely been razzled with him being around, because he is just a bigger fish that walks around, I guess, to them, isn't it? You know, I'm not sure that they entirely vibe with him to the point where it's like, yeah, you're not food. He obviously claimed to have that kind of connection.
And I think this is one of the things that the film is trying to kind of question and highlight, is that, you know,
bears, like,
obviously obviously your common sense goes, yeah, no, like, they're bears, you shouldn't hang around them,
don't go poking around,
because it's very dangerous. But then constantly Timothy Dreadwell is talking about how it is dangerous, and one of the last clips he recorded for his little documentary thing that he's making, he is saying, like, you know, if you came out here, you would die. He's talking to you years ago. If you came out here, you would die. And, you know, and you're saying, I'm not sure if the bears don't see him as food, but I don't know. He seems to have one of the most intimate relationship with the bears. I think a lot of it is him projecting onto him, but he's definitely interacting with them. They're definitely aware of him as a person. They make a point of saying that the bear that got him was a bear that he wasn't familiar with. Actually, the most kind of ominous bit of foreshadowing is, you know, Timothy Treadwell's talking about the bears that you need to be careful around and the ones you need to be cautious about. And he's saying it's the older bears that are hungry and desperate that you need to worry about those ones, because they will just do anything to survive. And if they want it, if they need to eat you to survive, they will do it. And it's highly likely that that's the kind of bear that got him in the end. So
it was very confusing, because at the same time you were witnessing is stuff that is hard to believe at the same time, because you've got all these thoughts of, like, they're fucking bears. Like, at any point now, he's going to get completely mauled to death. That's just, like, it's going to happen.
Hmm.
When is it going to happen?
But then he's,
and obviously,
like,
I didn't have, like,
them.
The...
He's just
fucking sat with them. You can't deny that. He's literally just sat there. He seems to have some sort of knowledge on how to be, like, around these bears. And he does it time and time again. It's not like he you know, it's the fact that he, you know, they announce, like, he's gone back multiple times. He goes back every summer. And he comes back and he talks about it to, like, the kids and all this stuff, and educates people on what the bears are actually like and how to interact with bears and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, this is mental. This is such a unique thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's what his downfall was, is that in the kind of very early clips that you see of him, he seems very passionate, but he's professional, and he's honest, and he's truthful about what they can do and what they can potentially do, and how, you know, but he carries himself in a way where it seems like, yeah, I believe that he's trained for this, or he's prepared, or he isn't just some random guy out there. But then in the later clips that you see of him, he's emotional and he seems almost reckless, and it seems like something's like, whether it's the isolation or something else in his mental state getting at him, it seems less that he's this kind of prepared figure who is equipped to handle the situation, and more just kind of, for lack of a better word, you know, crazy guy. He has gone out into the wild and just done this for the sake of it.
I guess the intimacy of the footage as well makes you kind of feel this sense of like, when people are saying, oh, he's just a complete nutter, I can't believe like he's doing this, like of course he got eaten, and you see this footage of him being so attentive and like obviously like knowing what he's on about to some degree, it makes you kind of feel like you want to stand up for him in a weird way, like look at what we're watching, like look at what he's doing, like there's some sort of like credibility going on. I just felt this sense of attachment to him, like by the end of the documentary I was like really quite shook of the fact that he was, and he obviously did end up getting mauled to death, and it's like, oh, I knew that anyway. It's sadder the second time round.
I like how Herzog kind of approaches his death too. The way that it's kind of put to the forefront of your mind, so you know going in that this is what's happened. But then also when, you know, later in the film where they're getting into kind of the more nitty-gritty details of what happened, and there's a scene where he had been attacked, he was with a partner and she had whipped out a camera and the cap was still on, but it was recording the audio and no one had listened to the audio, and Herzog said, and I think, yeah, I watched a Q&A and Herzog basically was saying that the producers really wanted to include it in the documentary. So he listens to it live on camera and goes, oh no, like this is, you should never listen to this and you should destroy this actually, because it's a disrespectful and horrible thing, and I wouldn't include it in the film. And makes a point of saying like, this isn't a, this story that I'm weaving as well isn't to you know, dramatize or scandalize his death either, you know, and not make it a tragic thing, which it is. You know, he says like, this is not a way that any human should die. And even though Treadwell keeps saying that if this is how I go, this is how I go, and this is what I want, it is so like an incredibly like horrible and brutal thing that happened.
It's really quite bizarre. I mean, there's so much I've got written down about it. Mostly, I mean, let's have a look here. I really like that they actually put that he died at the beginning, because it's like, it. I feel like if they didn't and he died, a lot of people who are skeptical going in would be like, "Well, I knew that was going to happen. Of course it did, idiot." You know what I mean? But like, because they were like, "Yeah, he does die," you kind of go in with a completely different like set of questions. Like, but yeah, and the audio thing was pretty bleak. It was definitely one of the more harsher elements. I didn't think that they would include it. Obviously, you don't hear it, but like the reaction to him listening to it was quite shocking. I've got here, it was all sympathy until he touched the poop. I don't know what that means. Given that you watched it the other day, I'm curious to know.
Oh, there's a part where he finds some bear poop. And he's like, oh, it's fresh. I can feel it.
Ah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. Well,
he's makes sense now. He definitely had a weird...
He's full on.
He definitely had a very weird obsession with the bears. I can glean that much. I think there's being a nature lover, and who knows if it's... You could argue it's some sort of spiritual connection that he's developed with these creatures, or perhaps even religious. There's a scene in the film where, because there hasn't been enough rainfall, the river's too low for the fish to come through, so the bears are starving, and he's recording himself and he's in his tent and he's crying and he's screaming and he's begging with God basically for there to be rain, and then there is. And it's a very profound kind of little moment. It's such a fast. I just find it a very fascinating.
Completely.
You know, because it is, obviously there's anecdotal, secondhand people who knew him, interviews and stuff, but because the majority of the documentary is this archival footage, which is something that you don't often see in these kind of documentaries, it creates a much more intimate portrait. And I like that Herzog kind of comments on him that he's a filmmaker, and he's talking about him, you know, his kind of artistic eye and him doing multiple takes and trying to craft a persona and saying how he's a very meticulous filmmaker, actually. And, you know, he would be very particular about kind of the outfits he would wear in the videos, and that thing about persona again, and just creates a really complex kind of character portrait of this bloke. You know, and it's like Dakar was out living with grizzly bears. He was already in it. That's already interesting enough. But there's all these other kind of there's all these kind of little folds and details and surprising features about him that you just don't really expect. That I think the documentary does a really good job of highlighting.
Yeah, I think there's many like perspectives that was probably the most shocking thing, is like the perspectives that were shown. It was basically due to the fact that I think the footage was so kind of like striking that it made you feel a whole load of emotions and things anyway about his character. But just hearing all of the accounts from all the people as well, that was just crazy. It's just such an overwhelming experience. I kind of was left this really intense ride, although the documentary is actually quite calm. It's very like, it's like watching a kind of like Bob Ross thing. It's like, oh, it's all very calm and he's with the bears, and this is like the archive footage that he's filmed of him talking about touching the poo and the fact there's going to be no fish. And it's like, oh, this is nice. This is a good ride. It's kind of a beautiful account of someone's life at the same time, because although it's being critical, it's also kind of, it's showcasing every element.
Yeah, I mean, it's critical, but it also seems to understand him, and it does.
Yeah,
I think it frames him as true, despite there being these layers, yeah. Despite there being an element of persona, despite the kind of questionable kind of, I guess, ethics of what he was doing. But there is this understanding of why he does it. Maybe we never get down to the core of it. But I don't think Herzog ever finds truly why, you know, why Treadwell was the way that he was. But it's an emotive thing. And there's kind of a empathetic kind of response. The film's kind of less about objectivity and subjectivity, and it's really just about empathy and, you know, just feeling this guy's soul and just watching him on his own as well. Like, that's, although, you know, that was like another kind of interesting little detail that a lot of the time he wasn't alone. definitely on his death, and on a few occasions he would be there with a partner. And but that idea that you're kind of seeing someone just spilling their heart out on their own, and there's kind of this you're seeing someone disconnected from the rest of the world, and like what does that do to them, and how does that kind of change the way they think and feel, and is that maybe more real in a sense, is that more kind of true and raw? You know, I think a lot of us have that fantasy about just moving to the middle of nowhere and, you know, just being cabin in the woods type deal or whatever.
There's a weird beauty behind it, isn't there?
There's a satisfactory idea about it, about being just going back to nature and living with the animals and living a simple life. And
I'd see a bear in the far distance, and that'd be like, right, I'm never going outside ever again, because they're terrifying. I don't know, man.
There's all these other aspects to it as well, just living, having to survive out there, you know, because you're just going out there with like a tent and a bag of shit, like, you know, it's not comfortable, it's not nice, it's not, you know, it's not like hospitable necessarily, but you watch him and he does generally seem like the happiest guy on earth when he's just in nature with the bears. It's very, very kind of surreal.
Yeah, and I just felt this really strong sense of respect, and I didn't think I'd get that at all. What an amazing, interesting guy.
Do you have any fine thoughts on Grizzly Man?
You definitely need to watch it, because it's not that long, I don't think.
No, it's only like 40.
Yeah, it's like a really easy watch.
Yeah.
But the story is just so mental. You kind of really need to see it to believe it. It is so crazy. It is so crazy. And it's also nice to be able to talk about that legacy with other people. Like, I found myself since talking about his life to others, just being like, you'll never guess what I saw. It's such an unbelievable thing. Like, it wasn't just this bloke who went out into the forest and he just loved bears or some shit. You know, this guy lived for the bears. He's, you know, this kind of slightly tainted Steve Irwin kind of character. You know, he's just so obsessive about nature, and you don't meet many people like that. And to be that kind of intimate and involved, is a very unique experience that I don't think I've ever seen anything like it before. The archive definitely helped with that. I was so glad that they sat on that for so long and just let it roll, because that was really, for me, the most interesting part. You know, you could do anything like that afterwards. You can set up interviews and talk to people about it, but this is stuff that he made. You know, he filmed to design to be in this kind of format, which was, it's different knowing the outcome, I think. I thought it was really good. It was a really good documentary. It was one that, like, I felt it deserved to have that time, and it flew by at the same time. And it was also kind of like sad when it was over, because I was like, well, that's like a most interesting kind of like documentary I've seen in such a long time. I definitely like watch it and then recommend it to people, because it's a brilliant story and it's put together very well.
I think sometimes with documentaries I can get quite frustrated with just the kind of objectiveness of everything, kind of the hands-offness, and just the, you know, we might talk to people involved, but it's just recounting, and all we're doing is just giving you Wikipedia summary. And what makes it such a powerful documentary is that very intimate and, you know, special look into this man's life. And and I think Herzog just inherently has an interest in the kind of thematic surrounding the story, and you know, gives you enough kind of breadcrumbs to think about just kind of general themes and ideas that the film is throwing your way, without overbearing you, and keeping it in like this really nice kind of this really nice kind of runtime. It doesn't like overstay its welcome or anything, and it's surprising as well, because it is a little repetitive in a sense. There is just a lot of interview archive footage.
Sure.
But it was just constantly interesting and engaging in that way. So, fantastic. Give it a 9 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, it was it was high up there. I'd agree, to be honest. It's 8.9. It was like really unique, really unique doco. Yeah. It was it's hard to kind of fault, because all the questions are kind of run over.
Oh yeah, that was Grizzly Man. I don't know what it is.
Great title as well, though.
It's a great title.
it's such a good title.
I don't know, why don't you tell me about your film then?
So the film I recommended this week was a film called Boiling Point. Actually, let me just get the fucking Boiling Point thingy open, so I could do this properly and not be a tit. The film I recommended was Boiling Point. It was one that I saw on a film festival, like, loadout in lockdown. And I was really disappointed that I couldn't see it. And I was disappointed that a film like it, that looked that unique, wasn't going to be in cinemas. And I still didn't catch it in a cinema, which is a shame, but obviously it came to Netflix, which was huge because I think it really brought like a whole new audience to it. It was directed by Philip Barantini. Brilliant. I think he was trying to think of what else he directed. I think this was kind of like one of his first, I'm not too sure. But it was one of, there was like a short film of this, similar to how Whiplash had like a short film. And it was only like 20 minutes long, whatever. I didn't catch that one, unfortunately. But yeah, this was like the full feature. It was around about an hour and a half long. And it's basically, in simple form, a film that completely centers around this idea that the whole thing is shot in one take. And it's not a funny kind of thing where it's cut at certain bits. They just genuinely set out to film it all in one go. And although that is technically very impressive and is a very good way of advertising the film, it was just a perfect choice for the film. Because it aimed to show a one night through a restaurant opening to close, and it is probably one of the most stressful films that I've seen since when me and Alex saw Uncut Gems in the cinema. I mean, that was incredibly intense, and this film just is perfect for that. And you know what I'm like, I'm such a technical kind of nerd that the idea of it being one shot was enough for me to be like, I'm watching that just to see how they pull that off and see how that adds to the film. But obviously I recommended it this week. I'm very curious actually to see what Alex thought of it, because I wasn't certain how he'd feel about it. That's not making a statement or anything. I just wanted to make sure that he liked it.
No, I liked it.
And I'm very curious to know what you thought.
Yeah, I liked it. The short one take thing has become quite quite popular in the past kind of decade. I guess just because as kind of technology has advanced, it's a bit easier to pull off. I'm sure you'll have a better understanding from what I understand. This is one of the few single take films where it being, because obviously the trick of single take movies is that they're not. But this is one of the few where it is relatively close to being at least as few takes as possible. I read somewhere that they managed to get it down to sort of like four or five kind of segments of like singular takes. And I think what you said about this being, because my mileage kind of varies with a single take thing. That doesn't, it's not necessarily enough to sell me on a film. It's impressive for sure, and when it's done well, it is cool. But there's just been a lot of it, and I don't think a lot of films necessarily have like the right reasons for doing it. And this is definitely like a film where it's very suitable. The high stress nature of the narrative, and this mindset the characters in, and this kind of this escalating kind of chaos that's happening in this setting. And if you've ever worked in one of these environments, you'll completely understand. You'll completely understand that kind of anxiety-inducing feeling of working like catering. And it's very appropriate for this film. It's Stephen Graham in the lead role, who's one of our best actors. He's just so good. This is very kind of his kind of role. This is very much like, I'm not saying that he was typecast for this. Someone was saying that the role is typecast for him. If that makes sense.
Sure.
But he's fantastic, of course, and everyone's really good, actually. I don't think I was taken away much by the performances when I first saw it, but I think upon reflection, they're actually very good at being believably amateurish, if that makes sense. I think generally the main cast feels very real in like a in an authentic way. And I think when I first saw it, it felt to me a bit like, oh, they're kind of underacting a bit. But I think it's part of that kind of authenticity that the film is trying to create in this situation.
Yeah, definitely. I think like they have to kind of also basically act at all ranges. And this is what I kind of found most impressive about it, was that you have extreme lows and extreme highs. So to be in the middle ground in certain areas, it almost just feels necessary, because I guess with a normal film, it's very easy to cut between like emotion, but you've got to make it that transition believable, because there is no, because it's real time. There's no clever camera tricks you can do to build on that, to make that more emotive. You've just got to act it out. There's no curtain to hide behind. And that's really tough. But somehow everyone in this pulls out such a stellar performance. And there's nowhere to hide. Like, you literally see every aspect of it. Like, they filmed this, I think because of the pandemic, they had to close production, so they didn't do it as many times as they liked, but apparently they got through 8 goes at it. So this whole hour and a half film was done around 8 times, and I guess they were able to painstakingly go through that and find that this was the most appropriate one.
Cool.
But it was certainly like a really well thought out journey. Like, none of this really felt, although I felt that there was a lot of improv involved, I don't think it was like that much to do with, like, in terms of like narrative and stuff, I don't think it was that much to do with improv. I think this is like a really, really well choreographed piece. And I can't even like begin to imagine, like, my brain hurts to kind of think of like how many things you would come into trying to even manage to put that kind of stuff together. Like, how many times have you had to practice outside the location, on location? It seems like pure chaos. And also having to hold your nerve as an actor as well. You know when the camera's not going to be there, but you also know that it's coming, and you've got to somehow like act as the same way when the camera's on and off you. That to me is mad. Like, the fact that I'd probably sweat more if I knew that the camera was coming and then the camera was on me, and I'd be like, you know, I'd probably be thinking I was, you know, I'd be doing a really good job when I'm just like, you know, making tables and shit in the background. I just knew that would happen.
Yeah, but, and that's what I mean. Yeah. That's what I mean in terms of the performance. So, like, I think because of just the nature of how they're shooting, there's just an inherent stress baked into everything anyway. And because stress is kind of the main kind of theme of the film, I think that is probably quite helpful for the actors in this, because like if this is like a tough kind of task to pull off anyway, and your main kind of thing that you think about in terms of your character is having to perform a tough task, it just kind of lends naturally to your performance. And then that kind of like amateurish kind of quality that I was talking about, where, you know, there were times with some of the films where maybe it felt a little, maybe their delivery might have felt a little awkward or something like that, but that feels very like human, and it feels very real, and if it was like an actual like, you know, there's like the cast of like younger characters, and they all have like kind of banter with each other, and I remember those scenes being like, oh, that's a bit awkward. But then I was like, well, but it would be in real life.
It is kind of like that.
And, you know, and if you're having to do this in one take and just trying to flow into that, it would be awkward. And, it does actually kind of work for the film, weirdly. Whereas if this was a more, you know, produced and structured piece, then it would feel off. It would be like, oh, well, this is an off note in here. But because it's all kind of flowing in into one another and, you know, we're constantly kind of changing, it just feels very natural.
Yeah, like, it's so bizarre because you see, certain performances and certain, like, mistakes and stuff that you wouldn't see in a normal film. And, like, that kind of bantering and for me, it was, like, the pauses and, like, the elongated aspects that usually would be cut around that was there that felt so foreign to me. I was just like, this is really weird. Like, and it's so well done in that way, and it's so well paced, and it's so well true to what it's like to have experience this kind of thing in real life, like just conversations and how they flow with different types of people that you're with, and how like the formality, the informality, the breaks and quirks and awkwardness, it really adds on to making you feel like you are just part of this team. And because you're only observing it, you're seeing all these issues and problems and things that are happening, but you can't do anything about it. And it just makes you feel so hopeless, which just adds to the pressure of it. And in the intimate moments where you maybe go into a back room and you see someone cry or like let out some steam or, you know, or are just stressed, you kind of want to reach out to them in a weird way. And it's just like, it's just you and them in that moment. It made me feel like, oh, I just want to kind of be like, I wish I could say, oh, it's all right. And you're just begging that someone will say something and you're just waiting, but you know it's not going to happen because, like, it just doesn't in those scenarios. I think, like, personally, the most impressive thing for me is how it brings out this sense of pressure, but also brings out the inner feelings of, like, I know that when I'm at work and it's stressful and that, and maybe you get stressed, I'm aware that scenario has made me look like a dick, and then I worry about the fact that it's made me look like a dick.
Okay.
And things that you never see in films are like the bits where they pause and they go, oh, I'm really sorry about that, oh, I didn't mean to do that. And you don't see that kind of like waiting thing where it's like they're doing other things, and that is the way that they are is affected because they're thinking of those things. You don't see that.
It all feels very real and believable. There are many aspects to this where I'm like, that's just movie-fied, or that element of the drama is just being punched up for the sake of it, or, you know, it all feels kind of very organic to the setting and the story and the characters.
But then again, it forces you to be patient at the same time, doesn't it? Like, I found that I wanted things to be resolved quicker. I wanted to see the results of things quicker, because like in normal movie world where you're editing and stuff, you're giving out information in clever ways, and then you're resolving them relatively quickly. Where here it was like, there's a scene where the waitress gets shouted at really passive aggressively by one of the guests, right? And you go for that whole ordeal and the awkward breaks of it all. And then when she says goodbye, you just want her to be able to talk about it and that not to be a problem.
Mm.
But you have to like be with her the entire time that she walks back and then apologizes to someone. And then it goes away for a while and you come back and she's still feeling that way. And you're just like, fucking hell. Like, you just want, it requires you to be patient. And at the same time, doesn't allow you to breathe in certain areas where it's like, this is so intense right now, like I need to get out of it, and you just can't. I think they could have done it where it could have just followed one person, but I really actually kind of like found it quite endearing when
switch perspectives for sure.
And it was always like you never really knew, so like I never even like, I remember there's this one shot where the guy who's like slacking went outside to take the bins out, but he was actually meeting his mate in the car. Like, that was like a really unexpected part of the film where I was like, why are we here? Or like what does this mean? And then I was going, does it matter? We're just kind of, it's just a part of the film, a part of the night. and then you get straight back into it. But then he's missed everything. So as an audience member, you've missed everything as well. And he's like, well, what's happened here? What's happened there? And you miss things, and it's like you're trying to figure shit out alongside the characters, which is so clever, because usually, like, you would know that something's happened inside and that he is unaware of it.
Yeah, you're not.
Whereas...
you're not, like, all-knowing as the audience.
No.
You're in the same shoes. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point, actually.
It's a very vulnerable thing, mm-hmm. and it makes you be patient, but it also makes you feel a bit... it just adds to the pressure of it, because you don't... like, if something surprises you... like, for example, obviously, the bit where the allergy thing happens. Like, when in that moment, you're like, the characters don't expect it, but you also don't really expect it either. slightly, yeah. Because of obviously the allergy thing that they build up. Yeah, that's probably a wrong example.
I get what you mean. Yeah, they do. As soon as they walked in, like, do you have allergies? Oh, yeah. It's like, okay, well.
That's going to be a problem later.
I wonder what's going to happen here.
Yeah. But, well, for example, a better example would be, like, the bit where the pot washer and the boy were having a chat, and she was like, no, she wasn't pot washing. She was, like, she was cutting the vegetables out back or something like that. And then she was like, roll up your sleeves and whatever, and then she found out that he'd been cutting his wrists. And it was such a shock. And the way that she obviously instantly reacted and started crying because of that, and they had to really, like, kind of, like, come together and, like, brave it out and then talk about it later, and she had to, like, be that kind of instant guardian to him. You were feeling all of that, like, in a really unexpected way, as she was, and it just made you feel like, fucking hell. Just really on edge and really nervous. And obviously there were, like, red herrings and stuff where it was like, oh yeah, do you have any allergies? No. It's like, brilliant. Well, they'd be silly not to use that. But, you know, to its merit, it does also throw so much at you that you sometimes forget things, but also sometimes question whether or not things are red herrings.
I do think that's probably the intention. Yeah.
I do think very clever.
I do think what a criticism I would have is that in reference to that bit with the young kid and, you know, self-harming, I think maybe the film maybe takes too many swings at, like, trying to talk about certain things.
Right.
Obviously, the kind of central thread of the narrative is following Stephen Graham's character and... what's his name? Andy, is it?
I think so.
And his sort of just general downfall, and you're watching him just kind of spiral out, really. And obviously, it ends with him overdosing and dying because you realise that he's an addict, and, you know, and all this stuff. I think I would have liked more time with that and more time to deal with that and to just stay on that. And I think some of the kind of kind of detours that we go on throughout the film detract from that kind of central narrative a bit. So when we do get to that climax, it feels a bit kind of like, maybe it feels like a few pieces are missing there for me personally.
Sure. I think that's very fair. It's trying to find that balance, isn't it? That's tricky, because you could go many different ways with where you focus on it. And I do think that is fair, like, taking too many swings at certain parts.
It feels like
it bites off a bit more than it can chew.
Yeah, then, like,
when you've got so much going on already.
The manager and how she's kind of out of her depth, and we think she's just kind of this heartless, kind of unempathetic cunt, yeah. But then we realise that she's kind of out of her depth and she's stressed out and stuff. But I'm also kind of like, I don't know if we need to, like, empathise with her. Like, she can just be a villain. Like, that's also fine. You know?
Sure, yeah. I think the scenario is a villain in itself, isn't it? Like, the fucking main character is stress.
Yeah.
And that's like that's a tough enough thing as it is, as opposed to, like, making, like... But I also found, like, you know, in those scenarios, when you're under that amount of stress and people snap and stuff like that, you're all the villain, really. You're all going at each other, when in reality, you should be helping each other. So
Yeah, I see that, yeah.
Which is also very relatable, because like, it did remind me a lot of like previous jobs I've had where, you know, when the oven's turned off and the night and, you know, the shutters go up, it's all like, oh, you're right. And as soon as it's like game time, it's like at each other's necks kind of situation and pointing fingers and all this stuff.
Yeah.
So I do think it was definitely very honest about that aspect of it. But I think you might be right in the sense that it maybe took more swings than it needed to.
I think so. It wasn't, it's not that you can't, it also seemed to me that maybe, you know, they were just trying to comment on too much as well, because they're talking about, you know, with the waitress, and she's getting, you know, kind of racist insults from customers, and then we talk about self-harm, we talk about addiction, we talk about, you know, money and all this stuff, and there's so many like balls being juggled there. It's like, well, which one is, I guess it's kind of the point of the film that they're all kind of interchanging. But like I said, we do have a main character, we do have a central focus. I do just kind of prefer when narratives are able to tie, if you want to explore a wide variety of themes, to be able to tie them all into the central narrative. And there were times of this where it felt a little too separated, and that certain certain sections of the film felt like their own individual short films within this larger narrative. It's an interesting approach, I think, this film has, where it's just it is just all kind of the whole kind of feel of it is just everything is going on at once and no one knows what to do. And I guess that's part of it, is just that it's meant to be a bit overwhelming and unfocused.
Right, yeah. And it's almost just like a shock to the senses. I don't think as a forefront it aims to kind of like, or kind of advertise to be this kind of relatable thing for people who've been through this kind of scenario before, but it's definitely very relatable in some ways. I definitely thought about many experiences I've had in the pressure that you face and all that kind of stuff. But it just showed the whole scale of emotions. And I think that's what he was trying to do. And the way that they did it, obviously, we've discussed that it's maybe not necessary, but it was kind of admiring how they showed it. It just felt like if we were going into certain areas, it might have wanted to be a bit longer, because it's also a very short film. And because you brush over so many things, they're not necessarily in depth. It's just kind of bringing light to them rather than going into depth with them. Overall, I thought it was...
But also that shorter runtime is kind of good for a piece like this, because you don't want this to... Obviously, yeah, it's meant to feel overwhelming, but you don't want it to feel, you know, exhausting.
Yeah, very true. But yeah, I was, for the most part, you know, it's hard to... I found it hard to criticise, because I really did, like, admire it so much. It was another, like, spectacle piece where its style is a great example of, like... This film's basically a great example of, like, why... how, like, camera style actually benefits narrative as opposed to going against it. I think it's important that, you know, certain, like, young DPs and anyone who's kind of, like, young in the industry and that, you know, they find strong reasons to defend creative choices like this in their work, because really, to any, like, producer or any financer of filming or anything like that, the idea of, like, a one-shot piece that lasts for an hour and a half is just a logistical nightmare. and also terrifying. It's like a terrifying like prospect to pull something like this off. So it was really sick to like see them do it, and it felt justified. But I think the most of the reason it's just a shock on the senses. That's kind of been like the one thing that I've described it to as people is, you know, it's impressive talking about the one shot thing, but being like, yeah, it was really intense and it was like this really overwhelming experience. That's more of the selling point to me. I think the one thing that it does, you know, really, really well at.
Cool.
Yeah, what did you think of it?
I would give it's a 7 or an 8. It's closer to an 8. It's closer to an 8 than a 6, I'd say that. Yeah, I liked it. I love Stephen Graham, so I'm always just happy to watch him in something.
He's fucking sick. He's very good.
And yeah, this is like one of the cooler little gems from the past year, so. Great rec.
Yeah. I gave it like an 8, 9, or like a 4.5. I look in the letterbox thing, I actually put... I hate Instagram influencers because that was also a part of the fucking film that really pissed me off. There were these characters who were like Instagram influencers in it, and they were like, oh yeah mate, so we can, I know you're fully booked and that, but can we have a table? And they would be like really just outrageous and really disconnected from reality, and it was just so annoying to see like the higher management ponder to it. Because I've totally seen that in real life before, you know, these fucking arrogant people who don't like actually deserve to be treated well get to, because, oh no, you've got to bend over backwards because they've got this many followers. It's like, fuck off. Yeah, really pissed me off. But that they did a great job because of that. It was just such a, like a, oh, I fucking hate these people.
What are we going to talk about next time?
Well, I think you should definitely go first because I mean I definitely haven't forgotten what I was gonna say.
Okay.
Obviously. Because that would be unprofessional.
Well,
and I don't do that.
It's very kind of you to offer, but you know, if you haven't actually forgotten it, I think you should go first because I mean I have forgotten my picking,
I'll tell you what then, I'll go off something on my wish list, which is something that I wanted to see in the cinema so fucking badly, and I never got around to it, so I'm definitely going to try and find it, but yeah. That's Licorice Pizza by Paul Thomas Anderson.
Cool.
That I haven't seen, I really wanted to see it. It seems like it's some sort of coming of age story set in the 70s, and... Yeah, I was like, I really want to see this. And I really, really hope it's actually, you know, great.
Yeah, I missed this one. I missed this one last year, so that's a good pick.
See, I was under the impression that you actually watched it.
No, I haven't shown it.
Missed that one. That's a shame. Oh, well. Anyway, go on. What have you got for me now? Or should I keep stalling?
No, I don't. My pick is going to be Do the Right Thing by Spike Lee.
Do the Right Thing. Oh, cool.
It's a film. I've never actually seen it.
Never heard of that.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's a... yeah, it's... Well, we'll find out where it's about, but it's Spike Lee.
Right.
He's he's one of the kind of more prominent American filmmakers.
Of course, yeah.
Very talkative about race and... Black culture, and this is one of his early movies, and this is sort of the one that kind of put him on the map, I think. So, be an interesting one to visit.
Okay, that's really interesting.
Cool.
He did. Did you do Black Klansman?
Yeah,
that was fantastic. I really like that picture. Fantastic. So that's Do the Right Thing, and Licorice Pizza for the next round of great. Podcast genius
of our wonderful, fantastic,
by the boys,
and very punctual podcast.
That's the one,
folks. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on social medias, all in the description below. join our Discord if you want to be part of the conversation, send us some recommendations, and keep up to date with the show. Also in the link in the description and somewhere on the socials. You know, don't be shy. If you listen and you've been a listener for a while, join the Discord. Hang out with us. Like, we love hearing from you, and it's a good place to hang. If you enjoyed the show, consider leaving us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts, and write a little something nice we might read on the show. And if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/thefinaldraft. There has just been a change to the Patreon. We have lowered the price to £4 a month from £5. So it's a little bit cheaper if you've been on the fence. Hopefully that's a bit of a... hopefully that convinces you. It's more of an incentive. Yeah, there's a whole backlog of content up there as well. So if you just want to do a one-time payment and binge it all and go, you can do that. That's absolutely fine. The options there. But you also get a special role in the Discord and a special channel that you already get access to in there as well. So, you know. Again, another reason. It's basically like the Cool Kids Club. You know, you pay a slight entry fee, but you get a very cool jacket, what can I say? I don't know what we're doing for the next episode, to be honest. Maybe Adam just saw Elvis, maybe we'll talk about Elvis. It might be something new that's out. But yeah, hopefully episodes will be coming out somewhere regularly again. Until then, we will see you soon.
Very formal. I actually really enjoyed that. That was like a really good outro.
I have to end up.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. I'll take it from here. Don't worry. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.